suelta la oiako elkarrizketarako, Alemaniako bi internazionalista kurdu dauzkagu, Jesi eta Nila. Bertan, Alemanian erantzun internazionalista antolatzen dabiltzaten militanteak, azken egunetako aurtengo Kurdistango egoeraren inguruan ongi etorria emango diegu eta ingelesez egingo dugu gaurko elkarrizketa. Welcome, Jesi. Welcome, Nila. Thank you for being here with us today.
Hello. Thanks for inviting.
Hi. Yes, thanks a lot.
Thank you for being here. I insist. We are here to talk about Kurdistan, of course. Shall we help the listeners situate and focus on the events that have happened this year already, starting the 6th of January, so we can provide with good context to the listeners. Could you tell us about these happenings?
Yes, I can start with that. So, as you mentioned, the youngest escalation in Kurdistan, Rojava, began on January the 6th when troops and militias that are affiliated with the so-called Syrian Transitional Government launched attacks on the three predominantly Kurdish districts in Aleppo. So there were bombardments of civilians and hospitals and severe massacres. And these attacks expanded across large parts of Rojava on the 17th. And the start of these attacks is a reaction to a meeting that took place the day before, January the 5th, in Paris, where a security agreement between the Syrian government and Israel was agreed upon and safeguarded by the U.S.
Mm-hmm. We also want to know about the ceasefire, the state of the current situation, and how the ceasefire has been built.
Yes. So actually, I forgot to mention that besides like just saying there are attacks in Rojava, maybe it's good to give a little more context. So there were like massive breakouts of ISIS prisoners in Rojava. So the Syrian military took over prisons and ISIS prisoners could get out, and many of the Kurdish SDF fighters also died trying to protect the prisons. And as a result from the attacks, the cities east of the Euphrat River are now under Syrian control, like Raqqa, Tabqa, Ain Issa, and Hesseke and Kobane are under siege, cut off from the rest of the territory, like Kurdish territory, mm-hmm. or the territory of the autonomous administration of North and East Syria. So, you ask about the ceasefire. Mm-hmm. So the ceasefire was announced by the Syrian regime on the 18th of January, but ever since the violence has continued and spread, as I said, to Hesseke and Kobane. And the SDF announced an extension of the ceasefire for another 15 days. I think it was yesterday. And it's important to understand that the ceasefire is no guarantee for peace or safety in the region. And the autonomous administration of North and East Syria, the Danes, they are warning of continuing military danger and military escalation in the region. And actually, it's expected that there will be another military offense, so they can see preparations for that in the region. Because the Syrian regime is moving troops to Kobane and still continues SDF and civil infrastructure and civilians. So, from the side of the autonomous administration, they really dismissed this official narrative of the ceasefire also as an excuse for preparations for further offensive attack.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And meanwhile, we have this ongoing humanitarian crisis based on, well, basically everything you've just told us. What could you tell us about this situation?
Yeah, so the humanitarian situation is really catastrophic. And for example, there are over 10,000 of displaced families right now who were fleeing from the attacks from Afrin, Raqqa, and the other cities east from the Euphrates River. So they are coming to Cizre. And the Danes are really working intensively to accommodate the displaced families. But even, yeah, in the situation in Kobane, there is a severe lack of electricity, water, fuel. So there's a crisis while there's severe cold and snowfall. So, yeah, the cold is the main problem here. And there are reports of children freezing to death right now. And the displaced families, they're accommodated in mosques and schools. But, yeah, it's, like, cold and really catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but also it has to be said that the people are like in resistance right now. So even in Kobane, where the situation is really, really severe, the people are still like resisting. And also the SDF called for general mobilization of the population. So the people everywhere in Rojava are now preparing their self-defense by setting up guard posts and arming themselves.
Mm-hmm. We've heard about this preparation, about this call to action, but meanwhile there's different interests going on, so we want to talk about geopolitics of the region. As we all know, Kurdistan is not, at least yet, an independent country. It's divided into different other states. And what's with the big blocs, that big blocs reactions towards the new Syrian government? How was the international response toward this new movement been?
Yes. So as you said, Kurdistan is divided into four parts, into four states. And there had always been like, intense interests in the Middle East region from different state blocs, like the US, the Soviet Union. But after the Soviet Union collapsed in the 90s, the US really tried to strengthen their hegemonical capitalist project in the Middle East, and they like implemented a project called the Middle East Project Strategy, and that was based on the elimination of potential threats to the US and the West. And they wanted to take over, or they tried to take over, all the control over energy resources and the corridors. And they also want to ensure the position, like the military and the political position of Israel in the Middle East, to so that the US can enhance their own political interests in the Middle East region. So the US always had like a pragmatic policy towards the Kurds and the Kurdish movement for different reasons. Once they had like interest in due to the fight against the Islamic State, and they wanted to gain their own US military presence in the Middle East. Second, they tried to put pressure on the Assad regime through the Kurdish movement. And third, they also tried to limit the socialist orientation of the Kurdish revolution, so by controlling the Kurdish movement, or like having pragmatic deals with them, they tried to limit the socialist orientation. So after the Palestinian genocide started, after the 7th of October, this strategy, this Middle East project strategy, even more strengthened in the region. And the US even more tried to influence the Middle East. And they had, like, with the shift of the Syrian government, they really had like a new force that help them in their interests. And the HDS, so the new Syrian government, is a new player that after the Assad regime accepts the US and the capitalistic rules and the US influence in the region. So the US is kind of not anymore really dependent on, yeah, like the split region with the Kurdish movement. So they having, like, they are giving now all the trust to the new Syrian government, and yeah, like giving legitimacy to the new Syrian government as a, yeah, so-called democratic force in the Middle East. And yeah, you can also see that in Europe, like, for example, the al-Shara, the president, was trying to visiting Germany, for example. He didn't in the end because there was lots of protest. But yeah, so the EU also, yeah, in supports the new Syrian government. And yeah, so the attack on Rojava right now that we are seeing, and also what the EU is doing, nothing, are part of a coordinated approach between the al-Shara regime and the West. So it's not like an isolated attack, but it's like part of this all coordinated approach and strategy. So we will also see that this war in the Middle East will go on after Syria, or after the attacks on Rojava. There will be even more conflicts because there's like different interests from the US. Turkey, European states, and Israel. And for the US, it might be best to have like a balance of those states under its control. And yeah, Israel is like an important player for the US in the region, because it's, yeah, if like the Israel has the like a dominance in the region, it's good for the US also. Mm-hmm. So all in all, we can see that this means like the US wants to, yeah, as I said, like strengthen their own capitalistic hegemony in the region and weaken other forces that have like other socialist revolutionary ideas. And they also strengthen like nationalist and authoritarian ideas. And yeah, so they use like words like peace, defense, for legitimizing those attacks, but in case it's just like empty words.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for the clear explanation. It's good to know the reaction of these big blocs, but we also want to know what's going on the inside, what a revolution means for them, for Kurdish people, for the whole Kurdistan, and also the reaction of European people, like not only from the EU, that we know what they do, that is a bit deeply concerned, but usually nothing more.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we talked about Rojava, but yeah, we didn't really talk about like what that means right now. So yeah, Kurdistan is divided, as you said and as I said, but there had been like different approaches in the history in the last decades to get freedom for the Kurdish people, and also not only the Kurdish people, but all the people in the region. For example, in Bakur, like in the Turkish part of Kurdistan, there had been like different fights for this. But in Rojava, like they really succeeded doing like having a revolution from the people's side. So they established like a democratic autonomous administration. That's what DANAS means. And they established like they call it democratic confederalist society system. So that means that the society is self-governing. And for the people, that means that they can really like rule about themselves and have like a political consciousness about their life. So now that this project, like this like democratic socialist system is attacked, that means that all this, like all those self-governance is like really under attack. And we can also see that like there's like different, that there's like a physical attack on the region, but also like a mental attack. For example, when before the attack started, the Turkey and the HDS, they were trying to get more influence about the like on the Arab people in the region to really split the Arabs and the Kurds in the region, so to play them off against each other. And so this is also like they really tried to cut the coexistence from the people in the self-governed area. And by this, they are strengthening nationalism, Arab nationalism, but also Kurdish nationalism. And they are trying to, like, reducing the socialist and the democratic ideas from the revolution to a, like, liberal idea of a national revolution. So what's happening is that the al-Sharaa regime are saying, oh, we will integrate you, the Kurdish people, as individuals, and we will give you rights, but they will never like allow the society to really fight for their own rights and their own liberation. So yeah, this is like one part of the what the democratic autonomous administration means for the people. The another part is the women's liberation. I guess you have heard about that.
Mm-hmm.
So the movement, the Kurdish Freedom Movement, had always been a women's movement. And after the 90s, they like really strengthened this idea of women to be free in the society, to free all the society. So from a national movement, they got to a social movement, or like a social movement. And we can see now that the attacks are specifically targeted also against women. So there had been like massive violence against women and female bodies. And also now that the fighters from the IS are free, there's like reinforcement of Islamic laws, like wearing the burqa, and also threats on the public. And all this is shown in the media. So the aim of the attacks is also to break the hope of thousands of women for liberation and the will to self-organize. And this also has an effect of all liberation movement, of course, so like seeing that this is happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. After learning about the attacks, ceasefire, of course, the geopolitics of the area, we want to know also about the response from the attacks. First of all, we can continue in this direction. Let me ask you about the reaction of the other Kurds, let's say of the other parts of the Kurdistan, like Iran, Turkey, and Iraq. What's going on in these other places?
Okay, so what I heard, there's like a massive wave of solidarity right now. And and I think Nile already said that like the attacks are physical and military, of course, but there's also the mental attack. And there's in that sense also a mental defense struggle, like the unity of the Kurdish people and their resistance that are really part of the resistance right now. And I read about institutions and organizations from the civil society in northern Kurdistan in Turkey that were like leaving to get to the border and cross the border to defend Rojava. So there are like mobilizations in the Turkish parts right now, and also hundreds of young people who are coming from Bashur and Rojilat to join the self-defense struggle in Rojava right now.
Mm-hmm. You come from Germany. You've been traveling Basque Country these past weeks, knowing a little about our movements and how we organize our territory, which is, of course, very different, but could you tell us about maybe the difference among the response you've seen here and the ones you're experiencing in Germany?
OK. Okay, I can start. So in Germany right now, there are like massive demonstrations. So lots of people going on the streets. There's like a big Kurdish diaspora like reacting to these things. And as Yassi said, the people are really like united in this case. And but there's also like all people going on the streets. So we can see like a social movement right now is growing. Social freedom and peace movement answering to the attacks. And yeah, actually we were a bit wondering like how what's happening here in Basque Country, because we know that the society is like really much politicized and aware of national and what do you say, like liberation questions. So we cannot see that much of awareness about the situation now, which we understand also because there are some questions about the alliances. About the alliances from the Kurdish movement with Israel and the US. And we know this, like, that no player, like, also the Kurdish freedom movement is not free of contradiction, and that this is, like, true in some cases. But we also know that, like, all the things that the Kurdish freedom movement had succeeded about, for example, when they freed themselves from ISIS, they only got, like, they could only win because of the support from people all over the world. So, yeah, the US had never been a strategic partner to the Kurdish movement, but like a tactical one or pragmatic. And yeah, as I said, it's not free of contradictions, but the real partners for the movement are other like democratic social movements and anti-systemic actors. So we need a response to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also like I can just add to that, like because of the strong history of internationalism here in the Basque Country, yeah, we were a little surprised that it just in our eyes it seems like a hesitant reaction right now in the streets, like a few mobilizations and small ones. But yeah, I think like the argument that you just mentioned with the alliances, tactical alliances with the US, like that argumentation kind of reminded me of the discourse we have in Germany around the Palestine liberation movement, because yeah, many people probably know that the left movement in Germany is really polarized in the question of Palestine, and yeah, many people are hesitant to act in solidarity. And there's like this argumentation to delegitimize the liberation movement because of the means or the tactics, for example, by Hamas. And yeah, we think it's a mistake to delegitimize the struggle because of that. And we really hope that here in the Basque Country, the Kurdish people will receive the solidarity they deserve for their resistance right now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for those sincere questions. Lastly, could you tell us honestly what could we do, how we could articulate to help and to show the solidarity you were talking about?
Yeah, so the last thing you said is very much what I'm saying. I mean, you're showing solidarity on the streets, in the media, whatever, because for the people there, it's like really important to see our voices, to see the people in support and solidarity. So, for example, today is the January 26th, and that's the Kobane Action Day, actually, because like 11 years from today on ago, Kobane was officially liberated from ISIS. So there's like many things happening today all around the world. And also there's like Action Week or Global Action Days They started yesterday and they are going till the 3rd of February. Lots of organizations and countries declared that we as people, we must unite to demand the freedom of Rojava and stand up for the humanity. And yeah, they demand to organize actions or create counter public sphere in the media and civil society, or also hold national governments and institutions responsible. Also demand political legal recognition and status for the democratic autonomous administration. So you can inform people about what's happening and really go into public with this and organize around. Yeah, and also there's a caravan that started a few days ago with people from different organizations and countries to. And they are traveling to the border of Kobane and informing about what they are seeing on their travel. And really, everybody is called to join this caravan, physically, but also from here to help with media or whatever. And especially, people from the, people with medical and therapeutic skills are called to join. So yeah, as I said, just join the demonstrations that are happening or organize them yourselves. So there had been thousands of demonstrations. People were braiding their hair, as a symbol of solidarity, or squatting places. And yeah, there had been demonstrations in the Netherlands, Italy, Poland, Switzerland, Catalonia, Sweden, the UK, Germany, and even more countries, and really thousands of people went to the streets. So yeah, as I said, there's a new social movement right now. And yeah, we cannot trust in the states, asking them for something. We can only trust in ourselves. So the only sustainable source of pressure lies in our shared awareness and solidarity of the people.
Thank you for your words of strength. So we thank you very, very much, your visit here, your stay here in Alavedi.
Eskerikasko.
Yeah, eskerikasko, and yeah, all the best and good fight.
Eskerikasko zuei, good fight.